Jennifer Egan is the author of several novels and a short story collection. Her last book, A Visit from the Goon Squad, won the 2011 Pulitzer Prize, the National Book Critics Circle Award, and the Los Angeles Times Book Prize. Her new novel, Manhattan Beach, was published in October. It's a rich historical novel bringing to life the worlds of organized crime, sailors, divers, bankers, and union men, set in the shipyards in 1940s Brooklyn. As the story begins, we meet a girl named Anna, her father Eddie, and a mysterious man named Dexter Stiles. I struggled with how to describe this book without giving away any key plot points or twists or turns, so I asked Jennifer what she can tell us about her story's main characters without giving too much away.
It follows Anna into various different worlds. We first meet her at 11 when her father and Dexter Stiles, who we understand is sort of a crime boss of some kind, make some sort of arrangement, but we're not quite sure what it is. Then the story leaps forward, and Anna is 19 and working at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, as many women did, you know, industrial work during the war to supplement for the men who were going off to fight. Anna, at this point, Anna's father has disappeared, apparently left the family, where he was, we know, pretty unhappy. Anna's younger sister is severely disabled, and that is something that her father was having an enormous amount of trouble feeling okay about, which was then causing a lot of tension with his wife, and it was just a little bit of a painful family situation. So we have reconnected with Anna and her mother and sister and aunt in 1942, and her path once again crosses Dexter Stiles, whom she's pretty much forgotten about because, you know, she was 11 when they first met, but it opens a whole set of questions for her about what exactly happened to her father and why he left. And so that's the present day setup of the novel.
The book ambitiously describes in rich detail America in the 1940s and in the middle of war. Here, Jennifer describes the different worlds she researched and recreated for this novel.
The worlds of the book, I think I can talk about those without giving too much away, are the Irish waterfront, really, which was immortalized in pop culture by the movie On the Waterfront. That movie derives from an expose of the West Side docks and how they were run and how corrupt the unions were. And that expose ran in a newspaper over a series of articles, and it was really a scandal and led to the end of all of that. But so that's one world. Then there's just the sort of the world of organized crime, and crime really became organized in America during Prohibition, when it basically took over the movement and sale of liquor, which was a gigantic industry. And the involvement of organized crime in the liquor business had a few effects. One is that it became much more organized and much more corporate and even sort of national. You know, different groups had to work together to make this industry profitable. And another result of that was that the image of the gangster, the liquor dealer, if you will, the liquor executive, became a kind of dashing figure. And you can see that in films and in books. And then there's the world of the Brooklyn Navy Yard, which is a fascinating place and was the largest builder and repairer of Allied ships during World War II and employed some 70,000 people, of whom about 5,000 were women. And then, in a way, the world that most beguiled me was that of deep-sea diving. And I came to that via ship repair. Divers helped to repair ships from the outside, from underwater. And that led me into a whole other field of inquiry. And then, finally, the world of shipping itself, the merchant marine, which was a really fascinating part of the war effort. In fact, the world of merchant shipping lost more men proportionately than any other of the armed services. They were killed in great numbers because they had very little weaponry to defend themselves, and they were targets for U-boats because it was incredibly effective to sink ships carrying essential war materiel to the battlefield. And these ships had very few means of defending themselves, so they were really sitting ducks. Ultimately, technologically, we found ways around that, and the Germans had less success that way. But for a period, it was really rough to be a merchant seaman, and there were lots of them who were, you know, trying to survive at sea in lifeboats and on rafts. I mean, absolutely harrowing stories. So all of those worlds come into play in this book.
Did you actually get to try on one of the diving suits? Because you explain it in such great detail, I almost felt like I was there watching it.
I did get to try one on, which was a great experience. As part of my research, I got to know a group of Army veteran divers, and they have a fairly organized veterans association, and they have a meeting every other year, a reunion. And so men from all different eras come together, and one of the things that they can do if they want to is dive in a diving tank wearing the old Mark V equipment. And the Mark V is the kind of archetypal diving dress that anyone would probably think of when they think of deep sea diving, the cylindrical copper helmet, the bulky gloved and booted body cover. And because they had those on hand, and there were actually guys diving in them, I was able to be dressed in one, which was incredibly uncomfortable. It weighs 200 pounds, and that is not easy to manage unless you're underwater, at which point it becomes incredibly useful to have those 200 pounds. But on land, it's agony. But it was really good to have the experience. I mean, I think I could have conjured it just from talking to people, as I did every underwater portion of the book, since I haven't ever even scuba dived, but it was great. It's always fun to have a personal experience if possible.
This is What We're Reading on Northern Community Radio, and we are talking with author Jennifer Egan about her new novel, Manhattan Beach. You portray Anna as a strong and independent young woman, yet there are things that happen in Anna's work and personal life that trap her. Like, she just can't escape being a woman in a time where women had fewer options on how to live their lives. How did this resonate with you as a modern woman as you're writing this historical take?
It was interesting to, and satisfying on some level, to write about gender prejudice, which of course still exists all over the place, and to have it be right on the surface. And that was sort of true, you know, of racial prejudice as well. There are a lot of parallels there. So that was actually quite satisfying. I mean, it was sort of amazing, for example, to write about Anna and her boss. She initially is doing a different kind of work and has a different boss, but once she sets her sights on diving, she is allowed to take a test. And she does that and passes it, and then is told by the boss, with no apology or any sense of shame, that the test was just a kind of a red herring. There was no way she was ever going to dive. He just assumed she would fail the test, and that would sort of make it easy. But the fact that she passed is irrelevant. She still can't dive. Well, of course, you can't say that now. That's illegal. But it's not that those prejudices don't still exist. So there was something kind of satisfying about having it be right on the surface. One of the challenges of writing about stuff like this is the danger of familiarity and cliche. I mean, it is there at every turn. You know, the girl who, you know, does a great job and overcomes prejudice and succeeds. I mean, that's a wonderful story, but it's way too familiar. It's not a story I'm interested in telling. So I had to find ways to inhabit this material and not tell the story we're all expecting to hear. And that was a great technical challenge as a writer.
Your last novel, A Visit from the Goon Squad, was a remarkable work. You won the 2011 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction for that. How did you go from that to this book? Was that a difficult process?
Well, I had been researching this book since 2004. So this one had been lying in wait for me. since before I even published The Keep, which was the novel before A Visitor from the Goon Squad. So I knew this was waiting for me. However, having found a much wider audience in the interim through having had great luck with Goon Squad, did make working on this at times somewhat painful for a few reasons. One is that I knew pretty quickly that this book would be very different from Goon Squad. And that was no surprise because Goon Squad, the difference between this book and Goon Squad is no greater than the difference between Goon Squad and the one before that, which was a gothic thriller. So that's normal for me. I like to try to, in a certain sense, just let go of everything I've been doing in the previous book when I get to the next one. But it did concern me to think that maybe people who had loved certain things about Goon Squad and had never known about my work before that might be a little bummed out to find that this had nothing in common with it. And then the other thing was that I think this book was probably the hardest one I've had to write. And the reason for that is very simply that since I don't begin with a plot or with characters, since I really come to those through my first draft and then start making outlines and plans and all the things that a lot of writers do before they start a first draft, having to know so much was very difficult for me because I didn't know what I needed to know until I finished that first draft, but I couldn't even write the first draft without knowing a certain amount, simply because it's just impossible to write about, say, life aboard a Liberty ship or deep sea diving in equipment from 1942 without doing some research. I mean, you just can't do it, or I couldn't do it. So it had a little bit the feeling of trying to build a bridge and walk across the bridge at the same time. And that was hard. And it would have been hard any time in my career, but the feeling that the stakes were high and that I actually had some expectations on me and that it would really be a bummer if this book were terrible added to my anxiety that it would really, you know, that maybe this was just going to be a big nightmare. But I proceeded as I always have. I mean, I don't know any other way to do it. It just, I would say it created some anxiety and discomfort for maybe 2 years, which is kind of a long time, that I might not have experienced so intensely otherwise. And yet, I mean, talk about a high-class problem. I mean, you know, I got very lucky, and I guess good luck always brings a certain amount of anxiety in its wake, but I was very happy to have that luck.
Manhattan Beach is Jennifer Egan's newest book, and it's available now in a bookstore or library near you. I'm Tammy Bobrowski, and this has been What We're Reading on Northern Community Radio.
What We're Reading is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. It's